Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just like the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. So Hannah, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up and things like that?
Sure. I grew up in an off-grid property, located in the far south coast of New South Wales, down in Yuin country, right down near the border of New South Wales and Victoria. And my parents, my family owned 100 acres at the foot of a sacred mountain, Gooliga, which is sort of positioned near a place called Mystery Bay, or Tilda Tilda, if you've heard of that. And sort of, it's interesting area because you have a lot of bushland, and then you have kind of rolling hills down to the ocean and a lot of wildlife. So it's very, very popular during sort of summer or camping holidays, but it is still quite remote. And, you know, people do go missing up on that mountain. And so it's had this fair share of folk tales around it, I guess, over the years.
Yeah, it's an area that I've heard of a fair bit when it actually comes to like Yowie encounters and stuff like that. Yeah. It's a fairly active area. Did you grow up there your entire life?
I was born and raised on that property, so via a short trip to the delivery room at the local hospital, an hour up the way, I spent pretty much my entire first 18 years on that property. And so I developed a really strong sense of place very quickly, which over the years has spooked people a little bit. I'll pick up on things that maybe others haven't noticed from comes to light later. Oh, if she was right, what she said about that, or, you know, I'll be watching something on TV and I'll just quite emphatically say, oh, that's kind of deep beach. And they're like, no, it's not. This is a, you know, American program. And then you look in the, you know, good old IMDb, and it's like, I was right. It was kind of deep beach. So I'm able to sort of notice the area quite easily. Just seem to have like a real strong sense of place around there. And I guess that's because I spent so much time out in the bush as a kid. We didn't have a lot of technology. Like, we lived off grid. We didn't have a TV for most of my childhood, so you got to make your own fun. And the part of mine was exploring and making friends with the animals and, yeah, trying to locate the country and, you know, walk lightly on it. So it was a good start to life.
How old are you now?
So I'm actually 39 this year. So a lot of these experiences happen, you know, between the ages of, say, 13 and 20 and 24, I'd say. And then my things that continue to happen to me now, they're like a little bit more sporadic, a little bit more unexpected. The majority of the experiences were all centered around my time living on that property in those circumstances.
And what was your family life like? Because being off-grid is a rather unique experience. What was it? Yeah, what was the dynamic like at home?
It was tough. It was very, I mean, I don't know if you know much about sort of off-grid farmsteading and things like that. It's hard work. Kids are part of the family. You chip in and you do the work as the adults do. So if there are trenches to dig, you dig the trenches. You know, if you want to add to the orchard that week, you're digging holes and planting trees. If we decide we need a carport erected or something, that was the sort of thing you would do yourself. So you kind of got a lot of opportunity to learn a lot of semi-useful skills, but it was kind of quite high pressure, and my family environment was very religious to the point where, you know, that would sort of clash with a lot of my intrinsic beliefs that I had in my own, you know, mind. I would see kind of religion and dogma as like man-made concepts, whereas I could kind of connect and see the sense in the more spiritual concepts, like the dreaming, you know, stories and the connection to place and everything having a purpose and a spirit. I could definitely, for my personal kind of journey around that bushland, I would see an affirmation of that more so than maybe going into a church and smelling incense and hearing hymns. You know, I think for me, there was a bit of a struggle there of what's real and what's not. So I would just go with my gut on that. And I still do. So like, I sort of always feel like, well, how is this making me feel? Or what does my gut instinct say about this? And so that sort of colored those experiences over the years, I would say. But it certainly meant that as I was experiencing the, you know, at the height of the experience, and it was very lonely because I didn't have anyone to share what was happening. And I, you know, even to this day, I don't talk to people about it because it's not something even now that's very kindly looked upon. People start thinking you're crazy, and all of a sudden you're no longer asked to babysit their children, you know, that sort of thing. So I've sort of kept it under wraps for, you know, a number of years, but I do think that it's important to document these experiences because for me, they were real, and I feel like there is more to our everyday understanding of our universe. And a lot of what we possibly experience is just new data that we haven't been able to quantify yet.
It sounds like definitely take more of a, I guess, a real life and almost an analytical view at the experiences that you had rather than the traditional religious point of view, because I guess when it comes to religion, everything that isn't normal or anything that doesn't kind of fit in the box of what your religion is telling you can potentially be portrayed as, you know, the devil or trying to trick you or something demonic.
Evil, demonic, yeah. So that was the answer to anything, was along the lines of, if you see anything, no, you didn't see it. If you hear anything, no, you didn't hear it. And that's just Satan trying to lead you astray, you know, so ignore it and it'll go away.
So where did all the encounters start to happen for you?
So, well, the very first encounter that is linked to me actually happened to my mum, and that was the week that she brought me home from the hospital. So I was born in a country hospital, and they were all amazed because I had this semi-unique birth where I was born entirely in the cow sack, like they call it the cow or the birth sack. And so normally, you know, as the baby forms, they're in a sack and that has the amniotic fluid in it. And then when the baby's ready to get born, they break the sack and then the waters break and then you start having your baby. Whereas in my case, my waters never broke. So I was born in a little bubble. And so the first thing my mum saw that she was giving birth was this something out of Alien, you know, and all these people running in going, oh my God, this is amazing. This is so rare. Come in here. And so they had to actually cut me out of the sack to check that I was okay. And, you know, they all said this was really significant. This doesn't happen very often. It's quite rare. And it's meant to mean something. Apparently they said to my mum, and mum's like, yeah, right, whatever. I'd like some drugs now for the pain. But when we looked into what they were talking about, apparently it is quite rare. And apparently it's something that would have in the past signaled that certain people would have sensitivities or maybe developed other senses. Someone would become kind of sages in the villages, or, you know, the medicine women. I think a few of them got chased off as vampires, suspected in the Middle Ages. But it's one of those things that would mark you out. And so, like, mum didn't know much about that, but she took me home and she was in bed and my little bassinet was at the foot of her bed. And she said she woke up in the middle of the night and she could see across to where my bassinet was or where she was lying, and that there were three translucent figures standing tall over my cot that they had at the foot of the bed. And that one was bending down to touch me. And she shrieked and jumped out of bed. And the moment she shrieked, they all disappeared in one go. And so she'd sort of woken me up standing next to the crib going, what just happened? And really freaked out, you know, and then started wondering, oh, did I just dream it? Or, but, you know, she was pretty certain even to this day that she saw something. And she definitely saw them, and they disappeared when she moved.
And that was the only time that your mum saw something like that with you?
With me, yeah. Yeah. That she's disclosed, yeah.
So that happens there. Do you have any other type of encounters later in life, or do you find that you are sensitive after the events that happened to you? And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Yeah, head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
By the time I was, coming into puberty, so around, and I was living a very kind of cloistered life at that point on the property, I didn't go out very much. I wasn't interacting very much. So I kind of was more introverted than normal. And so I think for whatever reason, I started having more experiences that I couldn't really write off as coincidence. But some things would happen and I think that's just a coincidence. But in this instance, I started having dreams about the age of 13 that were like no other dream I've had. And I've had quite a few different sort of dreaming experiences. I've had what would you call lucid dreaming. I've done sort of lucid meditation, those sort of things. Now, later in life, I've done dreams where I realized halfway through the dreams that they are a dream and I can change like the course of the dream event. These all sort of fall under lucid dreams mostly. I had a few out-of-body experiences when I was a teenager, just sort of mucking around trying to get off to sleep and accidentally jumping out of my body, and that scared the crap out of me, so I jumped straight back in quite quickly. But there were a number of things that started happening around that time when I wasn't really studying how to do any of this stuff. It was just sort of happening to me. So it's like, I don't know if there was some latent kind of, ability or something that was brought on by hormone shifts or whatever, but I started having dreams that were precognizant and they were very odd in the way that they would play out. So I would have no prior warning that I would be having one of these kinds of dreams. I'd just fall asleep and I would wake up in my dream, my eyes would open and I would be looking out through my own eyes. So my conscious self was the one looking out through open eyes, and the open eyes belonged to a future me, if that makes sense. So it's like I had two consciousnesses in my head at the same time. And so I could only look out and observe what, future me was observing or interacting with. And these dreams were not lucid dreams. They didn't feel like lucid dreams. They felt very different. It felt very much like almost as if it was an avatar and you were kind of projecting your eyes through to what the avatar would be, and you could feel what they were feeling, but you were separate from that, if that makes sense. So I had this experience kind of shift where the eyes would be open, I would be observing and I'd be interacting, but it wasn't truly me. There were two me actually involved with whatever it was. And these were all set in the future, and I didn't know exactly when in the future or even sometimes where in the future. And some of them were incredibly mundane and others were, really unexpected, like overseas travel, which we could never afford, or meeting people I'd never met, again, sort of like, why would I travel to Sydney and meet this random person? That can't be possible, And so these dreams were, there was no like rhyme or reason to them. It would just be fall asleep and I would wake up, open my eyes and then open my eyes again. And be peering out through my eyes, future me eyes, and have this almost like movie reel to watch about what was going on. And so I was starting to gain insights into things that would be happening because I'd already seen them, but that was in a dream. And it wasn't like one of those dreams where everything's a bit wishy-washy. It was like, these are absolute facts. And as soon as I woke up, I would write them down. And because I was trying to work out what was going on, and I thought having something written down with the date might help me try to figure it out. Like, I believe in data and I believe in, you know, gathering evidence and all that sort of thing. So that was helping me feel a bit less crazy. But some of them backfired a few times. So there was one case where I dreamt I was in England and I was a year older than I was, and the seasons were completely different, right? And there was no reason at all for me to go to England. I was still only 16. I didn't even have a passport. So it was like, it made no sense for me to have had this kind of insight. And yet, my sister was living in England and she secretly got engaged, and then they decided they were going to get married. And so within 6 months, guess what? We were in England for her wedding, and I was, you know, just shy of my 16th birthday. And so the thing that I'd said would happen did end up happening exactly how I'd pictured it, to the point where I kind of knew what people were going to be talking about before they started talking, because I'd heard that script already when I was dreaming. There was another time this happened in Sydney where for about a month I had a dream about this person I'd never met, and a month later I was at the party that I recognised. Suddenly I was like, oh, this is the party that the dream happened in. And then I looked across and I was like, oh, that's that man from the dream. I should go over and talk to him, because we were talking in my dream, you know. So I wandered over and I started asking him, you know, I called him by name and started asking him how his new job was going as paramedic and how is he finding it. And he just moved recently. How is all that going? And as I was talking to this guy, and he would have only been about 21 or something, his face was getting more and more pale, you're looking more and more freaked out, and he's like, who are you, and how do you know my name, and how did you know I just got a new job? I have not told anyone here that I just got a new job, and it was the job that I'd said, you know. And then I realized I'd probably done a bit of a faux pas there of trusting my information over what was actually in the room. So that, yeah, I'm great at parties, can't you tell? That freaked him out. And I resolved not to be quite as much of a chatty Cassie as I could help it in those sort of situations.
Sorry, I'll let you keep going.
Sorry, I was just going to say that at one point I predicted the death of a family pet who was very, very loved. I mean, all of my pets are very loved, but we had a special bond, and it was brutal because I dreamed of his death, and it was the first frost, which sounds so dramatic, doesn't it? But it was like, literally, I woke up and saw the first hard frost on the ground, which indicate, you know, you're right in the depths of autumn then. So it's like autumn's leaving, winter's coming. And I knew that he would die the day of the first frost. And I was upset enough about it that I told my parents. So I predicted that this would happen to my parents, and I predicted how it would happen and pretty much when, you know. I had the frost as my guide to that. And they both kind of just said it was a bad dream. don't think that that will get you out of doing your yard work. Go off and do it and, you know, stop being stupid. And then, you know, a couple of months later, I woke up and it was a frost. The first frost was outside and my heart just broke because I knew exactly what I was going to find that day. And sure enough, I came out and I said to them, you know what I said a few months ago about the frost? And Mum's like, yep. I said, the frost's outside now. The rest got really quiet. I said, so I'm going to go down and check to see how are you? But expect to see me soon. And Mum and Dad just sort of looked a bit freaked out and shared a glance and were probably thinking maybe she needs an exorcism or something. I don't know. But off I went down and I found him, and he had died, and he had died exactly the way that I said he would have. But when Dad went down to check on him and I said to him, you know, he died, he fell and broke his neck, didn't he? And Dad said, I can't tell yet. And he hadn't been moved or anything. But then as soon as he picked him up and he was a big animal, his neck was broken. So everything I'd said was 100% true. And that was the point where Dad went, okay, that's really weird. Like, really weird. How could you possibly have known that? I said, I couldn't possibly have known it, but I did. And yeah, I think he probably started stocking up on holy water or something after that. Thinking maybe possessed. Or, I don't know. I'm probably lucky I didn't wake up with a full blown exorcism getting done over my bed.
Does that make you worried about the dreams that you have today?
No, I think over time I've learned to put boundaries around those sort of things. I think it's like also I'm really aware of what content I'm subscribing to as far as like life content. So if I start, you know, I think of it like a diet, and if I start interacting with stuff that's just making me angry, or it's like bringing my kind of my sense of self into question, or anything that, you know, people are sparked up or fighting or trouble with the world, I start feeling really powerless and I start feeling really sad about those situations, that's usually when these sort of things will start cropping up again. And so it's almost like a reaction to my equilibrium sort of firing up a bit. I mean, I've always been highly sensitive. Only very recently learnt that I'm neurodivergent. So I always believed that I was sensitive and I would pick up on stuff. I'm amazing at reading a room, you know, that sort of thing. But I think the older I've got, I've managed to, I guess, make it work for me in that sense, and hope that I can continue to make it work, because I don't have any guidance around this. It's not something anyone's ever sort of walked me through, you know, astral travel 101 or, you know, anything like that. But the dreams were definitely a big part of my childhood and teenage years, especially the one that was, you know, quite nasty and would come back on multiple occasions. That was probably the hardest experience that I had.
And what was that, if you don't mind talking about it?
Yeah, well, that was really weird because I've heard a lot about sleep paralysis. And so I did some deep diving, you know, good old early internet when all this was happening. I sort of did some deep diving trying to work out what might have been going on. But for a number of years, it was definitely for a year, but it was sort of like my dreams had been happening for a number of years. And it was always this precognizant of, you know, things would be happening in the future. And then one day I woke up and I'd had sleep paralysis in the past, which from, you know, I'm quite analytical and I'm quite, you know, I'm open to suggestions and things. So looking at the data, I open my eyes, I'm having sleep paralysis. I tell myself, you're having sleep paralysis. It'll go away in a minute. Just see if you can sit up, see what you can do. This isn't real, you know, like I put myself through it. These were very different. They weren't, in my opinion, they weren't sleep paralysis. I feel like they were, sleep was being used as a means of access to me, if that makes sense. So what would happen was I started getting visited around 3 o'clock in the morning. It's probably about once or twice a week from age 14. And there would be a man in my room and he would be very angry and very, he had the demeanor of someone who wanted to cause harm and chaos, I guess. He was like an agent of mischief, but it wasn't playful. It was more like, I can only explain it as he was a giant douchebag in his manner. He's the friend. And so this person or whoever it was, when the attack would happen, I would be asleep and my eyes would open and I would be unable to move except for I had minor movement in like my feet and my hands and my mouth and, you know, I could move my eyes to track him because he would move around the room. And I would spend, he would be communicating with me sort of not verbally. So it was more kind of on an energetic level, if that makes sense, or like telepathy or something like that. It was not a spoken, he was communicating through speech, but it wasn't through his mouth as such. And the thing that struck me about it was that he had this real arrogant demeanor and like he wanted a reaction. He wanted to make me scared. He wanted to make me upset. He wanted to exert authority over me. And he really hated my family. And this guy, or whoever it was, like, he didn't look like your everyday Joe Blow. You know, he was quite young. He would have been probably early 20s in the first encounter, and he was always wearing black, but he looked hyper real in a way. So even if the lights were off when I was interacting with him, it's like he had this glow around him, like a dirty green kind of glow, and that would go when he left. It was sort of like the lights would be off, but it was, I guess, for my benefit to be able to see him. And I could talk back to him. So that was another thing which I don't think often happens in sleep paralysis, was I was conscious the whole time and we would be having these massive arguments about, you know, who, why he was there and why was he singling me out? Why was he threatening my family? What did he want? You know, and like none of those things ever really resolved, but he would just keep coming back. So because these things kept occurring, it became clearer to me that I think what he wanted out of me was a reaction. I feel like he wanted me to feel weak and inconsequential and sort of powerless to stop it. And I feel like he got something energetically from putting me in that position. That's just the sense I got. Because the only way I could break the experience that night was to scream. So he would like taunt me and be like, go on, scream, wake everyone up. And then, you know, you're a crazy girl again, sort of thing. So, but that was my only way of like getting rid of him, is if I screamed, I'd wake up, everyone else would wake up. Oh, he's had another bad dream, but he would be gone. But he was coming back on a very regular basis over, you know, the course of at least a year. He followed me to other places. So it wasn't just confined to one house, you know. So I was visiting family down on the South Coast in Victoria. You know, that was a flight. And he was there my first night that I slept there. He followed me to Stanmore in Sydney. And I was living there for 6 months. He would turn up every two days or so. He followed me to, you know, my family property out near Gooligar. So he was persistent, what would we say? But he never kind of communicated or got through what exactly he wanted. But it mostly seemed that he just wanted to upset me and bully me. And over the years, you know, I have been somewhat of a bully magnet as a kid. Being neurodivergent in a primary school, never really a great time. And so I think I kind of had to learn how to deal with bullies through trial and error, mostly error. And one day, it was getting just towards my exam period at high school. And one day, I just remember I didn't react when he arrived. And I simply said to him, you know, it's over. You have no power over me. Because I'd realized that the more upset I got, the more he seemed to be rewarded. And the less upset I got, the more angry he got. So I sort of figured it out that he was after my reaction. And it was like he was getting something or feeding off my fear or my frustration or whatever I was feeling. So by me saying to him, you're nothing and you can't hurt me, you can't hurt my family, and I'm stronger than you are and you know it, time for you to go. And he took a step back and he looked like the youngest he'd looked. He looked like really almost vulnerable and then furious. And then I realized he just looked like a spoiled little brat, you know, who was on a power trip or something. But that was the last time I have had to deal with that fish canoe, you know, like the plume, but touch wood, because yeah, let's hope he doesn't come back. But I have no idea why I was targeted out like that. Some people would say maybe it was my subconscious, but you like the realness of it. It was like hyper real. I could see, you know, the stitches in his clothing. I could see the color of his eyes. I could see. I noticed when he had a haircut. You know, wow. Things like that. It was just like. It wasn't just this faceless blob at the end of the bed. It was like someone with a vendetta or something against me. And I remember thinking to myself, how did they leave the property? How can this be possible?
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me.
My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.